Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
Oh, man. Terrific. Enjoying the Olympics.
Yes.
Olympics are happening. I'm enjoying them. The United States is cleaning up now that the diving is over. Watched an Oregon grad today set the Olympic record in the 1500, Cole Hawker, which was just terrific. He was, I think, seen as fourth place, probably, but a bit of a dark horse with his kick. And of course, if you haven't watched the race, I've spoiled it for you, and I'm sorry, but this has been days ago at this point. So
you had your chance to watch it live. You didn't. Now you have to listen to us.
Yeah, it was, he was like an eighth at 400 and did the thing that he's done so well over the course of the last few years. And then, the last 200 meters just found a space, thought he had a space, and then couldn't get there. Then had to back out of it and then found another space and kicked to beat Jakob Ingebrigtsen. It was a stacked field and it was terrific to watch. It was really exciting. I watched it in real time, which is like, yes. Mm-hmm. It really been enjoying the Olympics. This is always such a fun thing. I bought a TV to put in my office just for the Olympics. I've made good use of it. Played some golf this last weekend, went up to Seattle. So yeah, I have nothing to complain about. I do have things to complain about, but I won't.
We wouldn't really care about the things you have to complain about.
Nor the things that I have to be happy about.
Oh yeah, there's that too. I've also been watching the Olympics, and this is the first year that... My phone fell.
It sure did.
This is the first year that I have... This might even be the first year that it's happened, but Peacock has full replays of everything. Hmm. So you can watch. It's not just like, I want to watch this sport, so I have to either TiVo or like be available.
It's just on demand.
It's just, everything's on demand. So I've watched a lot of sports that I've never watched at like the Olympic level before.
Hmm.
And it has been awesome. I've watched surfing. I watched I watched most of the different kayaking and canoeing competitions. Watched a lot of rock climbing today. It has been awesome.
Hmm.
Those are sports that I never would have ever thought to watch, but for the Olympics.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, I could watch this. Like, I need to get the Ocho so I can watch these sports regularly.
I don't feel like the Summer Olympics has its own curling, right? Like, curling is something that nobody pays any attention to until the Winter Olympics. I don't feel like the Summer Olympics has that same phenomenon.
I don't know. Does anybody care about rowing?
No, but I don't think anybody watches rowing in the Summer Olympics. Like, I don't think it's the same level of care.
No, certainly not. I think maybe this year, with the introduction of the kayak cross, like time cross, which is a four kayak race on what is typically the single boat track, that could become the Summer Olympics version of curling. Because it's mayhem. It's a tiny, like these four 6-foot kayaks side by side, totally fill up the channel, and it is, they described it as Mario Kart on the water. And it's not wrong.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It could be that track and field is the curling of the Summer Olympics, and that we're biased because we're in track town. I think it's fair to admit at least that possibility that's the closest analog.
Track and field has such a world wide year-round presence.
Yeah.
And curling, though it is highly competitive and I could never compete in it, it's the one at like Olympic sport where every time I watch, I'm like, that guy's 60 pounds overweight.
I could do that.
Like, Like, that's not an athlete right there. That guy just, like, that's a bowler on ice.
Sure.
Yeah. I could do it. I won't.
Except that you couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Yeah. Well, in any event, as exciting as the Olympics are, we're not here to talk about Olympics. We're here to talk about watches, and watches we will talk about. Again, a neat week. Hey, I want to, before we get started here, I want to give a quick shout out to a, I guess you'd call it a newsletter. So if you navigate to www.itsabouttime.email, if you're on the Reddit Watches subforum, you've seen posts from It's About Time. I think the Reddit handle is, I'll come back to that. But this fellow has started a daily watch news newsletter. And you can sign up and get it in your inbox. Or you can navigate to itsabouttime.email each day. And essentially, this fellow, I think it's Vuk Radich. That's how I'm gonna pronounce his name. I apologize if I've messed it up. A daily newsletter about new watch releases. And I have been following his newsletter here for several months and using his newsletter to inform our show. I think that's just the simplest and most honest way to say it. And so I want to give it a shout out to It's About Time. Here's what I'll say. This fellow is putting in an incredible amount of work on this daily email. It's Monday through Friday, so 5 days a week. And he writes about every watch that he features. Unlike us, he doesn't link to like a worn and wound article. Mm. He's actually writing his own material about each of these releases. And it's usually four watches per day that he talks about a new release. Sometimes his releases are really hot off the presses. Sometimes they're a few days old or even, you know, maybe even a little older than that. But he acknowledges it when he does that. It's just terrific. And it's kept me more abreast of watch releases than, you know, Watchicity or what was it that what was the aggregator before that?
Watchville,
or Worn and Wound or whatever. I believe this is the best platform for getting really sort of no-nonsense news about watch releases. He posts on Reddit. He posts a link to his newsletter every day on Reddit. And it's completely Patreon supported. We, 40 and 20, support It's About Time on Patreon because we take so much material from him. Thanks, Mr. Retch. and happy to support that effort. So before we get started, quick shout out. It's About Time.email. Check it out. There will be a link in our show notes because I think it's really, really terrific. And the amount of effort that's gone into this is borderline mind-blowing. That's all I have to say about that.
All righty then.
Andrew, with that, do you want to get us started on our regurgitation of Mr. Radich's daily watch news?
I was going to, except that the link that you sent me it took me to the Fred Meyer app, like the grocery shopping app.
Oh boy.
So it took me out of my list of links and onto a grocery list. Yeah, so first up, I want to talk about something briefly, and this is something that Omega does, I think with some regularity, is they just like kind of discreetly drop things by the wayside and let them hype themselves up.
Hmm.
There's not a huge marketing campaign behind it. There's not a whole lot of juice. It's just, oh, yeah, we do this now. Yeah, it's not a big deal. What's up? And this thing that they're just discreetly adding to the list is moonshine gold references to the Aquaterra. So they're coming in two varieties. And for those unfamiliar, Omega has done some experimentation with – gold metallurgy. They are creating proprietary, maybe not proprietary, but I think proprietary compounds of gold in different colorways. They've got a rose gold, they've got a white gold, moonshine gold now being a yellow gold, with additional metal compounds in it to enhance the luster, to prevent some of the aging that typically comes along with precious metal watches. And this is in the Aquaterra. And first, I see this and I go, oh no. I think that I might be down with a two-tone watch now.
Hmm.
Because there's a few two-tone, like, gold and steel watches out there, or yellow and white gold watches out there that I've been like, oh, that kind of works for me. And the Aquaterra is just perfect in it. And in this moonshine gold, it's this really bright, vibrant yellow gold. And it's not old enough really to know if it makes much of a difference. I think moonshine first was released in, like, what's it? It's like 2018, 2019.
Something like that. Yep. Yep. 2019.
So fairly recently to be a...
On the Speedmaster.
Yes. Yeah, the Apollo.
The Apollo. Yeah.
So there's not enough time gone by to know if their claim of it really holds its luster.
Hmm.
But that's the claim. And this looks good in... For sure, green and black. I'm sure some other colorways will find their way in here, but I'm here for the two-tone in black. These come in at like 13.9, I think, on the 13.6 on the Omega website. So they'll be they'll be north of 10, or like maybe on a good deal at about 9. This is a good platform for two-tone, or good platform for all gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Monochrome, for their part, has them at 13.4. I don't know if Monochrome... It doesn't look to me like Monochrome has touched these, so at least based on the pictures. So, yeah. So it is 13.5-ish.
Yeah.
You were talking about price, and I had it in my head you were talking about thickness. Got it. Yeah. They're 13.5 thick. Yeah. I'll add that to the conversation.
Yeah.
Apropos of nothing.
Yeah, that's actually not bad for a precious metal. That mm-hmm. That's, and especially a precious metal alloy.
Did you know prior to reading this article that you sent me that that Omega pioneered the use of 904L in...
I read that.
And watches.
And...
Or at least possibly pioneered with the Plocroff.
And yeah, and I, without any kind of research into it, I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems possible, if not likely, that that's the case.
There's so many things, though, that were pioneered contemporaneously. Like, everyone happened to do it. It's just somebody got it to market first.
And in addition to the full size, they've also made two 38 millimeters with the 12.3 thickness. One of them's like a beautiful sort of red, and the other's this blue dial, the all gold blue dial. Mm-hmm. Did you see this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are great.
Yeah, it's I don't know if gold has ever really fallen out. It certainly doesn't. It hasn't held its popularity from the 70s and 80s. I'm wondering if this is a sign of maybe a little bit of resurgence. I hope it is. I could get down with a gold resurgence.
Yeah, you know, I want to say that we talked about that possibility with Evan a few years ago. I think I'm with you, right? That gold has never really fallen out, but it has maybe stepped aside for a little bit. I do think, with that said, I do think two-tone watches are either having or about to have a moment. I think Two-Tone is going to have a moment because unlike gold watches, Two-Tone, mercurial. And, the love for Two-Tone is mercurial anyway.
And can be much more affordable.
Well, sure. Yeah. Because right? It's less metal.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, I think that we've got 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, today's list has got.
Or five, maybe five gold tone watches. So I'm going to move on to one of those. This is a watch that I didn't see in any watch media, but I did see on It's About Time. This is a 34 millimeter Marlin that caught my eye. So it is a gold toned, pink dialed, mechanical Timex Marlin. They're calling this the Marlin hand wound 34 millimeter stainless steel expansion band watch. Thank you, Timex, for that clever naming convention.
Way to go. It's better than a 36 alphanumeric SKU, though.
Timex, I think, does not get enough action out of the Marlin. This watch is clearly aimed at women, but I will tell you right now, I'd wear this watch. I would wear this watch. And at a price of $239, if I could get that down on like a sort of discounted MSRP, I would consider buying and owning this watch. So the dimensions are as follows: 34 millimeters across, 10 millimeters thick, which includes a giant acrylic crystal, 18 millimeter lug width, and this lovely expansion band that is alternating pink enamel and gold tone, gold PVD stainless steel, mechanical movement. We don't know what type of movement it is. Probably a seagull or something.
It has to be a seagull at this price.
Mechanical movement. Breguet markers. It's a Marlin. It's a lovely sort of dusty pink dial with these raised, polished gold tone Breguet markers. A handset that is not going to win any awards.
It's the right handset, though.
It's a really simple gold tone stick handset. Big double dome crystal. This thing is fantastic. It's fantastic. I love it. I love this watch.
Yeah, this is good.
Stainless steel case too. So even though it's gold tone, it's stainless. It's not like a plated brass or something.
Or like Play-Doh or something that you'd kind of expect at a Timex at this price point.
That's right.
Pass. Yeah, it's a pass. I think it's a cool release. I want to see this in other colorways, like even a black dial and skip the pink alternating.
But you can get a black dial Marlin.
Yeah, but I want this setup without the alternating gold and pink. I want all gold and a black dial on an expando
bracelet. I wonder if that exists.
I'm not sure it does. I'm not saying it doesn't.
Maybe not in a... So I know they have a silver dial. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting. Well,
but the pink is cool. I mean, I feel like this should have come out in like February, March, ahead of Easter.
Oh, you in the Easter color. The people do things in color at other times. And you're like, pastel's Easter, neon is Easter.
It's all Easter. Watch dials should be white, sometimes black, and occasionally blue.
Well, even though Andrew doesn't like it, there'll be a link in the show notes.
I might not link this one.
It's It's a gold watch in honor of our gold watch episode that we're doing right now.
Inadvertently. There's a couple others that are there, but I'm not ready to talk about them yet. The next thing that I want to talk about is an interesting new release from G-Shock. Their two-tone utility color series. And usually G-Shock drops something and I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like, oh, that's kind of neat. That's a nice change. I think this is one of the cooler things that G-Shock has done in a while. They are taking five different models. What are they? To find them. The 110, the 6900, the X56, the GA710, and the GA100, and using their black resin case and integrating them with a kind of somewhere between FDE and like a tan strap, and which is like kind of the tactical soup du jour right now. Coyote is maybe closest colorway in the tactical world to these straps, and I'm for it. They've also got a it's a little bit darker than OD green. I'd call it kind of like moss green maybe. But I'm here for that. That's a cool thing because that's the sort of the world that G-Shock lives in, and it surprises me that up until this point they hadn't had that black case and strap color combination, because there's plenty of these watches in that color, but having the color combination of either that Coyote or OD is neat.
Yeah, and they've done this with the Mudmaster, and these I would say are Mudmaster inspired. There's a lot of references to Gorp Core in the write-ups for these. I've read a handful of write-ups.
That's a term that I was not familiar with.
Oh.
That was a new one for me. So I looked it up and then continued reading and was like, oh, you looked it up for me. Thank you.
Yeah.
which is kind of, I read, I don't remember where I read it, but it was some commentary on Oregonians dressing as if, and I'm quoting, a hike could break out at any moment.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're in the Northwest, Gorp Core is just clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like everywhere, our weather is vastly diverse during the day, and Oregonians take pride in the fact that it could be sunny and rainy all in one day. You might even get some hail. Weather is like that everywhere, but there's an outdoor lifestyle flair and flavor to Pacific Northwest fashion that has infiltrated our very existence.
And I guess Casio has actually referred to Gorp Core in the press release for this. All right. These are cool.
I like this release. And then, you know, they're G-Shock prices, right? They're not limited edition prices. They're not weirdly priced. They come in right aligned with what you would get a non utility color combo watch at.
Yeah, that's right. There's not anything fancy happening here besides the colors, and they're priced as such. Thank you, Casio.
Yeah.
For not being stupid.
Way to land it.
This time.
Yeah, I might get one of those 6900s.
Well, I'm just going to move it right along. I'm going to talk about a brand we do not talk about very much on this show because their watches are giant and beautiful, but giant, and have as of late been stupid often. That company is Panerai. Panerai. Panerai had its moment a few years back when Sylvester Stallone, who's got giant arms and wrists, started wearing Panerais. And they have of course, had multiple moments besides that. I'm being a little bit playful with that. But definitely had a moment with the sort of big wrist crowd and the big wrist, big watch period. And then I think that they've struggled to adapt. As a modern brand, I think they've struggled to adapt. They've done a lot of weird shit. They've done, you know, a few years back, they were like, well, look, we're making a conservatively sized watch. And we're giving it 30 meters of water resistance because, of course, you can't have 200 meters of water resistance unless your watch is giant, which we all know is untrue. Anyway, Panerai has struggled to keep up, I think,
they're
a little bit.
They're like a rich person's Invicta.
Yeah, maybe, Andrew. That's not unfair.
Because there's so many Invictas that have that, that are, they're Panerai rips. Or maybe Panerai is ripping weird Invictas. It's hard to say because they just do these weird, kind of like almost steampunky, strange industrial designs that are unlike a lot of other things you see in the watch world that are like, yeah, we have this for this functionality. Like, oh, okay. Panerai's like, no, we just have this. Because that's what we wanted to do.
Well, it's in that context that we can now talk about a bit of a refreshing announcement from Panerai, which is that they are releasing a 44 millimeter.
Ooh, it's tiny.
Basic bitch Luminor with the classic Luminor case, a very simple green dial, a Luminor logo. They're calling this the PAM 01624, which is just a very simple, very straightforward hand winder, just a touch of color that's just back to basics. They're like, look what we did. We've got a time-only display with our signature small seconds and nothing stupid or weird or crazy. You're going to get 100 meters of water resistance in this watch. You're going to get leather or rubber. You're going to like it. It's easy. It's a PAM. And I'm like, God, this is the most boring but most refreshing Panerai release in ages.
And it's 6,200 euros.
And it's 6,200 euros, which is... I mean, we're still talking Panerai.
Yeah, okay? We're talking Panerai prices.
It's got what I think Panerai would describe as their basest of base movements. This is a hand wound, time only. There's no module. There's no accommodation for a module. This is just a time only, very simple, 3 hertz, 3 day movement. At a reasonable price with a reasonable level of water resistance and a reasonable size. Like, why is it's so bizarre that the most boring possible watch release could be like, yes, Panerai did a cool thing by releasing a boring...
By not doing the Panerai thing. Yeah, I don't know. Panerai's always been a brand that has interested me, and I've always wanted to like the Luminor, for example, is a watch that I've always wanted to like. But have, even at this size, I can appreciate it, but it's just not for me. It's not even a guilty pleasure.
I'd wear the shit out of this. With zero reservation or hesitation, I'd wear the shit out of it.
So would I, but I'm not sure. Like, if I got it for free, yes.
I'd pay retail for this.
Really?
100%. I think this is terrific.
This, yeah, it's maybe a bridge too far for me.
Now, I will say, Panerai, being Panerai, has said, this is a 44 millimeter watch, and has said nothing else about the dimensions. I looked diligently. I could not find a thickness on this.
It's going to be 14 at least.
I'm guessing 15. I'm guessing 15.3. If you compare it to analogs, it's going to be just a touch over 15. It's going to have 24 millimeter lugs. Yeah, probably a 52 or someone on the lug to lug.
I don't know. I think the lug to lug is going to be a little shorter because this is a pretty square case. I think we're probably looking at like 48 to 50 lug to lug, maybe a little less.
Let's see if I can find the numbers. So the typical 44 millimeter cushion case are 1305 thick. So thinner than that, with a lug to lug of 53.
Ooh.
So yeah.
I recently saw somebody.
But you know, Panera has a pretty aggressive curve on that. So it probably wears relatively well for most people.
Yeah. You know, just happens to be a manhole cover on your wrist that curves down at the ends.
Yeah.
It comes back towards your wrist a little bit. I read somewhere, I forget who wrote it, that the magic, the true defining dimension of a watch was in the lug to lug. And I didn't fully disagree.
Yeah, no, I think that can be true depending on the shape of your wrist. For me, I've not had a lot of trouble with that dimension.
You've got two wrists, though.
What do you mean,
two wrists? You have very round wrists.
They're pretty rectangular. I've got rectangular wrists.
My y-axis is fairly short compared to my x-axis. My wrist.
So you are the one with the two wrists.
No, yours are closer. Tube is round circular. It's round circle. That's a rectangle.
Yeah.
Hand gestures don't do a lot of justice on a on a radio show or podcast as we do. We're hand gesturing, comparing what shapes are. And we can move on. This is an interesting release from Panerai, and it is also the most exciting Panerai release I've seen in recent memory.
What's next?
Ooh. I want to talk about something. I haven't read a whole lot about this watch, but I saw it and it just kind of, it was surprising to me. The Hamilton khaki navy below zero. And when I think of Hamilton, I have a pretty narrow window of what I think of Hamilton watches. You know, we have the Ventura, right, is their triangle, and then there's a couple little weird out there one-offs from Hamilton. But Hamilton is generally a pretty conservative, very traditionally styled watch manufacturer. And then you look at this below zero, and it looks closer to a Panerai. It's this big, chunky screws on top of the outside of the case, big, massive attached crown guards, crazy, weird angles and cuts on the lugs. It looks like an instrument. More than it, right? I mean, this looks like they popped it off of the inside of a submersible more than a watch, or like the inside of a cockpit. 46 millimeter case, 15.7 thick. This is a big, no bullshit, titanium dive instrument. 22 millimeter lug width. It is interesting. 80 hour power reserve. It's got the H10 Powermatic movement in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm reading about this, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like a $2,500, maybe $3,000 teched specced dive instrument. $1,750.
Is this the same watch that Matt Damon wore in The Martian?
Oh.
I think this might be. And I think it was used in Tenet as well.
maybe Hamilton has a ton of feature time in motion pictures.
Hollywood placement. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is so far outside of the Hamilton wheelhouse that I felt like I had to talk about it a little bit today.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've ever seen this in stainless before. Maybe that's what's happening here, that this is the first time. Because I know in The Martian, and I believe in Tenet as well, assuming I'm correct about this, it was this watch, but in black PVD, like a sort of murdered out version. Mm. I find that this watch to be a lot more striking in steel.
And with this yellow rubber. I'd wear the shit out of this watch.
Yeah. It looks highly visible. It looks highly legible is the word I meant to say.
How do you feel about the font?
I don't like it.
Nope.
I don't like it. But
I knew you weren't going to.
Yeah, you mean for the numerals? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't like it.
Well, the Hamilton font is its standard is the logo, current yeah. font.
Yeah, no, I don't like the Arabic numeral font. But I mean, whatever.
It's funny when I can tell if you're going to like a font or not.
Because I say it.
No, I can look at a font and be like, oh, Everett's going to hate that. Oh. I can't, it's like pornography, right? I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it. Mm-hmm. I just know. I'm like, ooh, he's going to hate that
one.
He
hates this. Yeah. That's funny.
This thing it's like kind of ugly, but I kind of really like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is unusual for me because this is also outside of my typical wheelhouse of watches that I would like.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, it's definitely cool. Given a choice between this or the Panerai, give me the Panerai all day. This, of course, is what, 20% of the price of the Panerai?
Yeah, I mean, this is under $2,000.
25%. So, but yeah, I'll take the Panerai all day long for a relatively similar watch.
Yeah, I mean, this is better spec'd. In every regard.
Yeah, sure. Who cares about specs are for suckers.
Yeah. Everyone has better water resistance than... oh, gosh, you just... Paddock just reduced everything to 30.
That's right. Yema.
Oh, yeah.
Yema, man... What a cool brand, right? This is this old brand that's been around forever, but then went away, but now is back and is just deep catalog. Let's freaking go. So they're releasing a Navy Graph Marine National, which is Yema's sort of skin diver, right? Mm-hmm. In contrast with their more serious Superman, which is like a diver, with the locking bezel, blah 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 blah. The Navy Graph is a more slender watch, a skin diver,
a touch more svelte.
They've now equipped this thing, so Yema's doing a thing. They're like, we're in our resurgence, gonna make hella badass proprietary movements. And that's what we're gonna do. And sometimes we're gonna make you like do Kickstarters for these, which is weird for an established company. But you know what? Fuck it. It's gonna be worth it, guys.
So we're like kind of okay with it.
It's going to be worth it, you guys. We promise. It's going to be worth it. So once again, here we go. We don't have a Kickstarter, but we've got a watch that's being released, a catalog watch that's being released in a new version with an incredible movement. This is the CMM 0.10, which is their three-hand movement with a big old anti-magnetic balance. And this stabilized bridge that they call a transversal bridge, a stop seconds mechanism, and a big old giant barrel giving 70 hours of power reserve. This is I think Yema is doing more right now in-house to develop movements, I think, than any other company on earth. Maybe there are a few smaller companies, but this is all new architecture. It's developed in-house, and they're pushing the limit, and geesh.
The movement looks so good.
It's too. A beautiful movement, yeah. So,
and it's lightly decorated, but in just the right places. It looks almost like looking at a cross section of a twin turbo engine, right? It's not super beautiful. It's just looks good.
And so what you get a 39 millimeter by 11 thick. And 11 thick, you're like, oh, 11 thick. But that includes the 2.5 millimeter double dome sapphire. 46 millimeter lug to lug, so wearable even for you big Y-axis people. Screw down crown, 300 meters of water resistance.
Yeah, that was the big shock. We're looking at like a 9 millimeter thick watch here.
300 meters of water resistance. Whew. Yeah.
You don't owe me that, but thank you.
It comes with a bracelet or a quote-unquote Marine National strap, which is exactly what you might think it is. Sapphire crystal in the case back. It's coming right now in this, like, they're calling it navy blue. This feels a little dusty for me.
A little lighter than navy.
To be navy blue, but that's what they're calling it.
Color matched. It looks like a ceramic bezel. No, it's not ceramic. That looks like a...
I think it's a sapphire bezel. Yeah,
it looks like a sapphire bezel. Mm-hmm.
It's a sapphire insert.
Yeah.
On the bezel. Again, that CMM.10 movement, which is a manufacturer movement developed and assembled by Yema in Morteau, France. Everything made either in France or Switzerland. This thing's sick, dude.
It has manufacture français at the 6 o'clock. I don't know what their thresholds are for saying it's French made.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I don't know.
I imagine it's probably similarly stringent to US made, but not quite as stringent as Swiss made.
These things are coming in at 1690 euros. You can place orders now, shipping at the end of September.
Yema's doing some shit right now. They're making some moves. They're like this kind of dark horse working in the shadows, dropping some cool shit and just chugging on along without need for fanfare or hype.
Yeah, I mean, at dive watches at or around $2,000, you don't have a ton of options, right? That's we've talked about this before. That's sort of like a little bit of a dead zone, right?
I don't know. There are options, but a lot of them are just kind of a bummer. It's like, this maybe shouldn't live in this space.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
and bang for your buck at the $2,000 mark, there's not much there.
You've got a lot of Seiko. You've got the Hydro Conquest, which is coming in at a roughly the same price. You've got some tag stuff that's sort of in that world, and we've waxed poetic about the new Aqua Racer stuff. So they're you know, Monta's just above that, you know, closer Dox to that
in the zone.
Tag pricing. But geez,
the Hamilton.
This feels to me like it plays, and
yeah. And
in terms of the movement, you're gonna be up there, right? That this is a much cooler movement than something you'd get in a Monta, for instance. No disrespect to Monta, but this is a cooler, there's cooler guts in this for sure.
Far and away.
And of course, the Monta, they're different beasts, right? They're not really comparable.
No, they're, you know, similarly priced.
So I think depending on what your priorities are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think just the movement alone and the work that's going into these movements is the bang for the buck in this Yema.
Yeah, I'm about it. Andrew, what's next?
Next up for me, Bramont Broadsword Recon Bronze. So we've talked about Bremel.
Recently, even.
Recently, a few times.
We even got Mike Pierce in the dish a little bit.
We did. And so we know that they do a lot of military inspired, a lot of very classic and traditional military watches that are all very lovely with, you know, some upgrades. And this is a tribute watch. It's a limited edition. How many are there? 100? Yeah. Limited to 100 pieces. 40 millimeter case. It is made of solid bronze, brushed finish. It is gorgeous. A just slightly gloss dial on it. And it's not a bronze Bremont logo on it. It's close. It's like a golden yellow with His Majesty. It's not Her Majesty. It's more His Majesty's Armed Forces, HMAF underneath, small seconds at the 6 o'clock. This is just gorgeous. This is a dress field watch with small seconds, and I absolutely love it. Only 100 pieces, which kind of bums me out. 4,000 American money on these. case back is stamped with all three of His Majesty's services approved by, it's Her Majesty's Armed Forces still on the back. So a little late to the game on this. Salida SW260 chronometer rated movement. This is a cool metal release of just something neat.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an existing platform.
Yeah.
Right?
It is. It's the bronze edition of it.
I think it's a little bit confusing in light of Bremont's Watches and Wonders release of the Terra Firma series, which I think it's fair to say wasn't greeted particularly warmly by the enthusiast community. Not that I think Bremont should be all that focused on that community. With that said, this is it's a bit of a curious release, given that this has got the old logo. I don't know what to make of this.
I really, really dig it. And for 100 pieces, how are you going to go wrong with something like that?
Yeah.
Do you mean the Terra Nova releases?
That's what I mean. Yeah. What did I say? Terra Firma? Yeah. Terra Nova. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, because Terra Firma is a company that we hear millions of ads for locally.
That's right. I just said a wrong thing.
I was like, ooh, I didn't know there was two of them. I don't know. I'm okay with the Terra Nova release. I sort of get it.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it too. But I don't think it's unfair to say that they've gotten some.
They certainly have. And it's a little bit out of alignment with the heritage of the brand, if we can call it that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, it's new, right? It's different. And we as watch people like or hate new things. Sure. There is no middle ground.
You know, the only thing I had, I'm going to gripe. It's a 100 meter watch that's 40 millimeters wide and 12 and a half thick, which, I mean, I just don't, it feels to me like.
He just wants the baby got back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this seems fine. That's what, $5,000?
What'd we say?
I think 4,100 euro. Yeah.
3,950 American money.
Whatever.
I'd wear the shit out of this too. It's lovely. Like a good sandwich dial on it. Just, yeah.
All right. As promised, more gold. Fears.
Oh, yes.
Fears has come back with a new Brunswick Midas. This time, they're calling it the Brunswick 38 Midas 2. And this time, we get a 22-karat gold-plated watch. So Fears, old company that was resurrected by Nicholas Bowman-Scargill, who is, I believe, the grandson or perhaps the great-grandson?
I think grandson.
And so, you know, there's this, there's a family legacy there, which I think in the age of zombie brands is charming. And he, yeah,
it's almost not a zombie brand. It's almost like a, like we took a break and now we're back.
And in my humble opinion, and I think by mostly all accounts, is doing a terrific job. This is a Brunswick release, and the Brunswick, I think, has been one of Fear's most successful models. And it is nailing it, right? This,
yeah,
it's the Brunswick case that you know and love. Cushion case, 38 millimeters, 42 lug to lug on this, you know, relatively compact square case. I think I'm reading just under 12 millimeters with the crystal and really close to 11 without.
11.84 with crystal.
Okay, there we go. And then plated, I think in a traditional method by a gold plating specialist local to England. This is cool. This is cool. 100 meters of water resistance. So it's definitely a sport watch. Although I think most people would see this and say dress watch. It is definitely a sport watch in the classic orological sense of that phrase. We've got a top grade at a 7001.
20 millimeter lugs on it.
Hand winder. Yep.
This is going to be a bit of a strap monster, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it just, it looks great. It's coming on this light blue suede, I believe, strap. But I think you're right, Andrew. You could put this on just about anything. Great dial on this thing, too. So this thing's all gold. We've got gold case, gold dial, really terrific raised black or dark, dark markers. Onion crown. It's perfect.
Fierce has yet...
A little thick, though. A little thick.
Fierce has yet to do something I don't like.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least in this modern iteration, they're all bangers. What do we got? We've got $3,700 excluding VAT. These are non-limited, but there is a limited production. I don't know exactly how many they're going to make, but they are going to be numbered. So non-limited edition, but limited production. I'm not sure what the difference is. Maybe it's just we're going to make them.
Until
we're going to make the orders.
Yeah, until they stop selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
And then we'll hold a little bit of an inventory, I bet. I don't know. So we can expect a good, a healthy inventory of these, I expect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I have to say about that.
I can't believe how many beautiful gold watches we've talked about.
Alcantara. That's the word I was looking for. The strap is a light blue Alcantara. Alcantara?
I'm not sure. I don't
Alcantara.
I don't hablo. I said that to some Spanish-speaking folks the other day.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me if I spoke Spanish in Spanish, and I said, no, I don't hablo. And they, like...
Fell out?
They fell out. It was, like, the funniest shit they've ever heard. And I'm laughing, too, and I was like, I'm really sorry. Like, but I'm like...
Was this in a professional capacity?
It was in a professional capacity, so there were a little bit of regrets for that. And I was like, whatever. They responded well.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry, you can talk at me and I can maybe get the gist. And we figured it out. We got to where we needed to go.
You got where you need to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
It started on good footing. Like, you make a joke and you get somebody to laugh and you win them right off the bat.
Yeah, it either lands or it doesn't. But right, if it lands, you're in good shape.
Yeah. Okay, so I have something that I don't recall ever talking about before, which are U.S. exclusive releases from Grand Seiko, and
I do this,
but they're not as I'm usually looking at JDM or Europe exclusives and really lamenting. I love both of these colors. We have the SBGA 507 and 509.
And these are both 44GS.
Yep. So they're paying tribute to the transitioning sky over Lake Suwa with its new regional releases. So as per Grand Seiko, we have a lovely nonsensical story about their color inspirations. We have a really gorgeous, kind of speckled with white, blue, and this red, pink, like kind of watermelony color speckled with white. And this is my fucking jam. That is one of the coolest colorways I have ever seen. I absolutely love it. Both really good texture on this, on both of the colorways. I'm all about it. These are 300 pieces each, $5,600. And it's Grand Seiko. 12.5 thick, 40 millimeter case. They call it a dusty rose hue or cool blue. I wouldn't really even call that a cool blue. Cool blue is like, tends to be icier for me. This is a pretty rich.
Yeah.
Pretty rich blue.
Yeah. But definitely leaning towards the purple end of blue. I think that's what makes it cool.
Yeah, I would tend toward white when I think cool blue.
Mm, yeah.
Like icy.
Sure.
9R65 movement. Yeah.
I guess what's notable about these is the Kirizuri dials, right?
Oh, which yeah. But leave that out.
Kirizuri. So they've done Kirizuri before, I think, on US releases, but Kirizuri is like a Japanese like wood block method that, and they're incorporating like a mica powder to give sparkle in Kirizuri. So these are kind of a sparkly wood block print type dial. You know, like with all things Seiko, it's like squint a little.
Just like laser cut precision on the handset and the applied markers.
Oh yeah. Seiko does their thing, man. These are gorgeous. That like many, many, many Grand Seiko things these days, these are expensive and thick. Mm-hmm. But the 44GS case is terrific, even at the 12.5, I think it is. These are spring drive, 100 meters of water resistance.
Yeah, 12.5.
9R65 on these.
Mm-hmm. I don't want a power reserve indicator.
Oh, well.
I get that it's a thing, right? Like if you have a Grand Seiko, you have to just accept that there is going to be a power reserve indicator. I just don't want it. Even as subtle as these are, it is such a huge turnoff for me. I don't see a world where, like, barring winning the $2 billion lottery, where I'm buying a Grand Seiko with a power reserve indicator. Without it, this like rose color with no power reserve indicator, I'm having a hard conversation with my wife like tonight about getting this watch.
You know, we've got a Grand Seiko dealer here, AD here in town, and I've been in and tried on a handful of Grand Seikos. I will say, for my money, the thinner Grand Seikos is it's at. And they do increasingly, they're doing thinner watches. Even on the thicker watches, the bracelets are incredible. The finishing is incredible. I mean, you put one of these on your wrist and you're like, oh yeah, I'm wearing a really nice watch. But the prices, you know, we're talking for $9,000, $10,000 on some of these watches. You've got just a ton of world. So I don't think Grand Seiko is missing. Obviously they're not. They're incredibly successful. They're being slow and deliberate with their releases. Their catalog is in really good shape. But this is a luxury watch. It's sometimes important to remember that. No, gone are the days when Grand Seiko was Seiko branded and a value.
Yeah, that's where King Seiko kind of lives now.
We don't, the value proposition isn't necessarily there anymore. But, and maybe that's just okay. I don't think, I'm not saying that it's a complaint.
Gone are the days of Tudor being a value,
I mean,
younger brother to,
you still get
to
a
Rolex.
BB58 for $2,500, that's terrific.
That's a steal on a, I mean, but that's a not brand new in box. You might not even get the box. You might just get papers with it.
How much is a brand new Tudor BB58?
38,
36? Brand new for under $4,000, that's a value. Yeah. No doubt about it, that's a value. That's a value prop.
Are they under four?
I'll take, yeah, $4,000 for a brand new BB58. I'm gonna go out okay. on a limb and say that's a value prop. At 4,000 flat on the website.
I think I'll accept your position.
With there. A Cosc manufacturer caliber and a 5-year guarantee.
I think I accept your position.
Fine. Fine. Agree to disagree.
I just
one more watch.
I just accept it.
One more watch, Andrew. Oh,
fuck you.
God damn it. It says the web server is down, so I'm going to have to talk about this from memory.
It's going to be... No, let's do it. Do it from memory, because you don't even know which one you're going to talk about, because there's two watches left.
Oh, well, I just have one more. So Bulova released a Lunar Pilot in red. And
it's red.
And it's red. That's and that's all I have to say about that.
It is down.
Warner Wound is down.
My browser's working. Seattle Cloudflare working. I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. Let's see. Hold on. I can find it. I can't even find it.
I can't even go backward.
Yeah. Ooh. I found something. Ooh. So, you know, we do this thing. We read about, you can't memorize all this stuff.
Some people do. We're not those people.
So this is a 43.5mm Lunar Pilot. And it's got a scarlet dial that they're going to call a blood moon, which is a thing that happens
once a month for most women.
A silver tachymeter scale, high precision quartz, and it's red, and it's $900. And I don't believe it comes on a strap, but
it comes with a strap. So you get the box set.
I don't believe it comes on a bracelet is what I meant to say.
I'm looking at it comes with a bracelet, yeah. A box set with a strap.
For $900.
This is,
and the red is really cool. That's what I wanted to say about this.
This is one of those watches for me that like I just always want to pull the trigger on.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I put it on,
they're like, it's too big.
It's just not for me. And you know, I had that same experience with the Speedmaster up until recently, and now have like this weird itch behind my right ear that just won't go away. It lessens whenever you wear your Speedmaster in my house. but I love the Lunar Pilot. It's super cool. It's got a great story. It's a really attractive watch.
Great movement, 262 kilohertz.
And now that they fixed this whole, like, if you get it on a strap, you can't put it on a bracelet nonsense.
Yeah.
Which was, like, almost an inexcusable decision to make.
I still don't get that. Yeah, I still don't get that.
Now that they fixed that, the modern iteration is, like, a truly fantastic, no-bullshit moon watch. That isn't the Speedmaster. And there aren't very many of those out there.
Do you feel like this should have 100 meters of water resistance? Because that's what I feel.
I feel that about the Speedmaster too.
Yeah.
Well, I bet the Speedmaster does have 100 meters of water resistance.
Probably. Yeah.
But at this point, you can't change it. The outcry of the Speedmaster world, if you were to upgrade it to 100 meters of water resistance, would echo throughout eternity.
Andrew, you said you have another watch you want to
talk
about?
No, you sent me two, and I closed the link already, so we're...
All right.
So well, it's closed. It's
there
done.
We go. There we go. Did I have one that I didn't talk about?
Yeah, it was a Nevada Gretchen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is exquisite timepieces.
We're not talking about it. I already closed the link.
It's got purple.
Don't ignore him.
Yeah, that's just, it.
I wish this was a dot over 90.
You might, Speedy.
I don't.
I'm okay with it.
I don't understand the. Because I'm not a Speedmaster guy, yeah, right? Like I don't own 10 of them.
That's a pretty high level want.
These are so fucking heavy too.
I mean, I've been wearing that thing. I would say I've been wearing that thing 60% of the time. I've just been Speedmastering it up, and I've been raw dogging it too. No poly watch. Just
it's wound though, so you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is
wound. Respect. Yeah.
I've been wearing the shit out of it.
Yeah. It's because it's so good. I don't know how you don't.
It's so good, man.
And you got a screaming deal on it. All you do is get hit by a car.
Yeah, it's not hard.
A little truck, but I'm not going to take away from your experience.
It was Andrew, other things. What do you got?
So for the last several years, I have been using a grocery store pepper grinder. Like, it's just a glass jar with a little plastic brown lid. It grinds my peppercorns when I need. It came like that. When it runs out, I just pour more peppercorns in it.
Sure.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Fine.
It's been doing the thing. I think prior to that, I had a different one that did exactly the same thing. Just like it's the grocery, like you buy it off the shelf and then you open the lid and you just grind your pepper right out of it and you can refill it. It's fine. I'm making breakfast 2 days ago and I go to make a couple turns of pepper and the center of the fucking thing just it falls out. So into my bowl of beaten eggs, I have introduced a dozen peppercorns. And probably another dozen in semi-crushed ground, broken up state. And I get kind of upset. I say, okay. So as people like us do, I'm like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to get the right thing. And I've had electric pepper mills before. I've had little spinny top. I've had, I don't know, 100 is an exaggeration, but I've had an easy dozen varieties of pepper mills before. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go to the internet on this one. And I just do the Google. I'm like, all right, what's the best pepper mill? And I start with what I like. One of my real reliable sources is Wirecutter, right? I trust what Wirecutter says. If they say it is the truth, I will more likely than not accept it as the truth without much fact checking. Because I just trust them. I don't know if maybe I shouldn't, but I've just never been led astray by Wirecutter. And so I did a little bit of peripheral looking and kind of the general consensus was, yes, this is the one. So I just bought a Peugeot Perry U-Select pepper mill. They are exactly the pepper mill that you expect them to be. Did I send you a link? Yeah, I sent you a link.
Didn't send a link, but I found it.
They're just, I thought I did. They're just the pepper mill, right? They are exactly what you'd expect them to be. And that was kind of why I was good with it. Like, this is the OG design that all others have been designed after. It is a 100-year-old, virtually unchanged design. It cost $45 on Amazon. It'll get here tomorrow. It has a good volume capacity inside. The one kind of knock that it got was that you can't see how much pepper is inside of it, and the concern for the writer was, well, sometimes that means I'm out of peppercorns. That's never a concern for me. I have the pound jar of peppercorns in my pantry because I use whole peppercorns for things with enough regularity that I just always have them.
Yeah, that seems like a weird concern, right? Like, don't use the peppercorns in the dispenser as... your gauge for when you need more.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's, like, it's a really simple.
Well, and then I think that's just good inventory management of your pantry. Like, if you wait until you're out of something to add it to your grocery list, like, shame on you. You deserve to be out of whatever it is.
Also, move across the street from your best friend so you can just call them up in the middle of the day and be like, can I borrow some?
Yeah, I need cornstarch. Like, okay, dude, it's in the pantry. I have a well-stocked pantry all the time. Because when I get to be like 10% on something, it hits the grocery list. I got back stock, man. Anyway, so I
replaced the cornstarch, by the way.
You did? You bought a whole... Because it was a new tub of cornstarch that hadn't been broken into yet. And then you just kept that tub and bought me a new one. We were out of town or something. So I came home and it was like unchanged. It was just like a new tub was replaced where the old tub had been removed from.
It was the most conscientious thing I've ever done in my life.
Perhaps. But I appreciated it. And I also would not... I'm like, it's cornstarch, dude. But yeah, so I've seen these. Everyone has seen these. I finally did it. So now next to my salt pig will be a nice looking pepper mill.
You know,
and they last forever.
It's one of those things that it's one of those things. I mean, this is a bit vain, but like you have people come over and like, yeah, it's nice to have like conscientious decision making be displayed, right? It's like a low-key thing, but it's like, oh, I'm conscientious about my tools.
Yeah, if someone comes into my house kind of like unannounced, I don't expect them, they just happen over and they walk into my kitchen, they're gonna see a knife block with an interesting array of like curated, not matching knives, a well-seasoned, well-used Lodge cast iron, probably one other pan on the stove, a salt pig, and now a Peugeot pepper mill right by the stovetop.
I like the logo. I think I'm going to buy one of these. We've been using the Kirkland pepper grinders for...
Yeah, because you buy it, it's filled with pepper. Yeah. You grind right out of it. But
it's a bit of a waste. There's a bit of waste involved in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, that's kind of part of how I justified it, why I was using the shitty ones. Because I was like, I already bought it. It's like, it's totally fine. It does the thing. And then the middle broke out. I almost had a stroke. it was such a weird way to break. It was just total catastrophic failure.
Just exploded.
Yeah.
Andrew, I've got another thing.
Do me.
How do you feel about hot dogs?
I love me a hot dog. You know, the other day I saw this Instagram reel of Japo dogs where you flour it or egg it, flour it, and then panko coat it. And then
Korean dogs or K dogs.
Well, this was called Japo dogs. That's what he was calling it. Because then it was like a crab mixture on top of it with spicy mayo. I didn't have imitation crab to do that, but I definitely did deep fry my hot dogs coated in panko.
Yeah.
And then I had three and I took a fucking nap. It was like finished third one, lights out. Like an hour and a half later, I woke up as if I'd been asleep for days.
Like, oh God, what happened?
So that's how I feel about hot dogs.
I'm a huge hot dog fan.
It was these hot dogs, by the way.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's clever. I really like a beef hot dog, right? And I don't want a Polish dog. I don't want like an Idel sausage that's not a hot dog. I want a beef hot dog. I like Nathan's hot dogs. They're good. They're always good. They've got good flavor. I also like the Costco dogs that you can buy from the refrigerator section.
I have one problem with those.
The burps?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have one small story. Sorry to interrupt. 2020, there was this neighborhood barbecue that they had very deliberately come and dropped off like a stack of invitations to the police department of like, please come by our neighborhood family barbecue. We would love to have you. I worked a late watch, obviously got there after said barbecue.
Sounds like an ambush to me.
And right at the beginnings of a pretty large protest forming at the federal courthouse, but they had brought over these aluminum tray, hundreds of Costco hot dogs. And who can turn down a Costco hot dog? Right. So I had probably three Costco hot dogs. And I remember, and I will forever and always have like a taste aversion to Costco hot dogs, because that night wearing a gas mask, I could taste CS gas and Costco hot dog burps. It was so bad.
Yeah, the burps from the Costco hot dogs are intense.
It was just, and you've been in a gas mask before. Like that's your ecosystem that you're living in. And so it was CS it's gas like and Costco hot dogs. Here. Yeah, it wasn't great. So continue.
Well, fair enough. I do really like the Costco hot dogs, but I like a Nathan's hot dog. They're good beef. I don't know if they're good beef. They
taste good.
They taste good.
They got good snap.
They're a little more mild than a Costco dog, but they're too small. The regular Nathan's hot dogs, just a little bit too small. You either have to have two. You can't have one. One Nathan's hot dog just isn't enough for me.
No.
Two is maybe a little bit much with all the bread. Anyway, long story short, last time I was shopping for hot dogs, I noticed that Nathan's has released an all beef, what they're calling a colossal quarter pound beef frank. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna get that. my first reaction when picking up the package, I was like, oh my gosh,
that's a heavy hot dog package.
That is, oh, this is 2 pounds of beef. So I took it home. I cooked my very first of these in the way I like to cook hot dogs. Now, there'll be people that tell you the only way to cook a hot dog is to grill. I disagree with that. And I'll lay down my gauntlet and you can think what you want of me. But I think the best way to cook a hot dog is to put about 2 ounces of beer in a frying pan to loosely cover the frying pan. Bring it up. So hot dog, 2 ounces of beer. Bring it up to heat, let that beer steam and eventually boil off. And then once the beer boils off, you put a pat of butter in alongside the hot dog and you turn the hot dog and the butter until it's evenly fried on all sides. The beer and the steam brings the hot dog to temp, and then you can get the outside crispy in the butter. I think that that is the best way to cook a hot dog. So I cooked this hot dog that way. It's giant. Mm-hmm. I put a bun on top of the hot dog and then put the lid back on for about 20 seconds.
Steam that hot dog bun.
So the bun gets a little soft and also gets a little like, yeah, it takes on some of the butter on the edges. That's how I like to cook a hot dog. And I eat this thing and I'm like, this is it. This is perhaps the last hot dog I'll ever eat.
No,
and
it's
I don't
not
mean,
the last hot dog.
I don't mean the last hot dog. I mean the last type of hot dog. Mm-hmm. I cannot see myself needing anything else besides this. It was as close to, you know, sometimes you're like, that's the perfect food item. Mm-hmm. This was the perfect, like if you want a hot dog, it's the perfect hot dog. This is the perfect grocery store hot dog to bring home and eat. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
They're nice and thick. They're 2/3 the length of a Costco dog, but they're the same, about the same diameter. Mm-hmm. They're great.
Great. The perfect hot dog. Mm-hmm. That's my feeling on it. I do not believe I've ever had or will ever have a hot dog that's better than this. Now, I like all hot dogs. So I'm not going to be like turning my nose up at other hot dogs. But if you're buying a hot dog to eat at home.
A packaged hot dog, you probably won't beat it. Yeah.
This is the one. This is the one. And maybe there are analogs to this. I don't know. But I was like, yep,
I used
this
to
is
go
the one.
Hebrew Nationals.
Yeah, Hebrew National, good.
And I ultimately, I settled on Nathan's. And then when I saw these Colossals, I went to the Colossals.
Yeah. I think Hebrew Nationals tend to be a little bit beefier, which is sometimes good.
But
they're like sort of in between the Nathan's and the Costco.
I like the Nathan's.
Me too.
Yeah.
Hey, folks.
We've done it.
We've done it. Andrew, you have anything you feel like you must say before we go?
Not anymore.
Well, then, in that case, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank you sitting at home or in your car for tuning into this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor. Go to our website. That is watchclicker.com. That's where we post all of the episodes of this podcast, but we also put articles and reviews and other things on there. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that on Instagram at 40and20 underscore watch clicker or at watch clicker. If you want to support us, and oh boy, we hope you do. We do need money to keep this thing going. You can do that at patreon.com/40and20. Look, I know we say it every episode, but it is important. If you listen and you like the show, go to patreon.com and give us a buck. It really helps this thing out. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.